The Things They Carried, Disc 5.
First Lieutenant Jimmy Cross stood 50 meters away. He'd finished writing the letter in his head, explaining things to Kiowa's father, and now he folded his arms and watched his platoon crisscrossing the wide field. In a funny way, it reminded him of the municipal golf course in his hometown in New Jersey. A lost ball, he thought. Tired players searching through the rough, sweeping back and forth in long, systematic patterns. He wished he were there right now, on the sixth hole, looking out across the water hazard that fronted the small flat green, a 7-iron in his hand, calculating wind and distance, wondering if he should reach instead for an 8. A tough decision, but all you could ever lose was a ball. You did not lose a player. And you never had to wade out into the hazard and spend the day searching through the slime. Jimmy Cross didn't want the responsibility of leading these men. He'd never wanted it. In his sophomore year at Mount Sebastian College, he'd signed up for the Reserve Officer Training Corps without much thought. An automatic thing, because his friends had joined, and because it was worth a few credits, and because it seemed preferable to letting the draft take him. He was unprepared. 24 years old and his heart wasn't in it. Military matters meant nothing to him. He didn't care one way or another about the war. And he had no desire to command. And even after all these months in the bush, all the days and nights, even then he didn't know enough to keep his men out of a shit field. What he should have done, he told himself, was follow his first impulse. In the late afternoon yesterday, when they reached the night coordinates, he should have taken one look and headed for higher ground. He should have known. No excuses. At one edge of the field was a small ville, and right away a couple of old mamasans had trotted out to warn him. Number 10, they said. Evil ground. Not good spot for good GIs. But it was a war, and he had his orders. So they'd set up a perimeter and crawled under their ponchos and tried to settle in for the night. The rain never stopped. By midnight, the Song Trabong had overflowed its banks. The field turned to slop, everything soft and mushy. He remembered how the water kept rising, how a terrible stink began to bubble up out of the earth. It was a dead fish smell, partly, but something else, too. And then later in the night, Mitchell Sanders had crawled through the rain and grabbed him hard by the arm and asked what he was doing setting up in a shit field, the village toilet, Sanders said. He remembered the look on Sanders' face. The guy stared for a moment and then wiped his mouth and whispered, "Shit," and then crawled away into the dark. A stupid mistake. That's all it was, a mistake. But it had killed Kiowa. Lieutenant Jimmy Cross felt something tighten inside him. In the letter to Kiowa's father, he'd apologize point blank, just admit to the blunders. He would place the blame where it belonged. Tactically, he'd say, it was an indefensible ground from the start. Low and flat, no natural cover. And so late in the night, when they took mortar fire from across the river, all they could do was snake down under the slop and lie there and wait. The field just exploded. Rain and slop and shrapnel, it all mixed together, and the field seemed to boil. He'd explain this to Kiowa's father, carefully not covering up his own guilt. He would tell how the mortar rounds made craters in the slush, spraying up great showers of filth, and how the craters then collapsed on themselves and filled up with mud and water, sucking things down, swallowing things, weapons and entrenching tools and belts of ammunition, and how in this way his son Kiowa had been combined with the waste and the war. "My own fault," he would say. Straightening up, First Lieutenant Jimmy Cross rubbed his eyes and tried to get his thoughts together. The rain fell in a cold, sad drizzle. Off toward the river, he again noticed the young soldier standing alone at the center of the field. The boy's shoulders were shaking. Maybe it was something in the posture of the soldier, or the way he seemed to be reaching for some invisible object beneath the surface. But for several moments, Jimmy Cross stood very still, afraid to move, yet knowing he had to. And then he murmured to himself, "My fault," and he nodded and waded out across the field toward the boy.